Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to the UBS Conversations podcast channel. For today, we are back with our monthly Sustainable Investing Perspectives conversation. Within the latest Sustainable Investing Perspectives publication from the UBS Chief Investment Office, among the topics covered for the month, the team discusses the reasons for and benefits of investing in people, which will be the focus of our conversation for today. So with that, let's take a moment to meet our guests joining us from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Glad to welcome back Amantya Muhidini, Sustainable and Impact Investing Strategist for the Americas. We're also fortunate to have with us today from our partners at Lazard, Jenny Anderson, the Global Head of Sustainable Investment and ESG with the firm. So with that, Amantya, Jenny, thank you both for dropping by the podcast and for spending some time today with our listeners and their clients. Welcome.
Thank you for having us, Dan. Always a pleasure.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
So with that, let's jump right into it. Amantya, I had mentioned at the top that within the July edition of the SI Perspectives publication from CIO, the team does highlight three reasons why investing in people matters. So can you walk us through these reasons and what we should learn from them?
Yes, of course. And as listeners of this podcast, and in particular those that follow sustainable investing research would know, we have a long-standing view that investing in people and human capital management really matters to financial performance. So what we did this summer was really take a step back here, look at some of the data out there in the world, and just come up with three reasons, which are a different way of thinking about this why. Firstly, one of the things that we're noting is there's a lot of attention and focus on the effects of the changing climate and weather patterns and how they impact potential long-term risk or corporate profitability in the short term. Now, the other thing that climate change is impacting is worker productivity. And so this is really reason number one why thinking about how companies are managing human capital is important, just because as the ways of working may change, especially in those industries that rely on workforces that are outside doing activities, the changing climate will impact productivity as well. That's number one. A second one is the two-letter word now, or acronym, AI. So this almost feels perhaps obvious to note, but really with the advent and evolution and very rapid growth of AI, we see opportunities for boosting efficiency, and we also see potential friction. And so the role of emerging technologies such as AI on employee productivity and who is in the room as well, who's your correct employee to generate kind of value, is a second reason here why investing in human capital management matters. And then the third one is that we've found, and there's ample evidence here, that employee engagement drives customer engagement. So what I mean here is that engaged employees provide better services, they're more innovative, and also they provide better customer service. And so in those industries which are going to be more consumer-facing, the quality here will really be important over the longer term for companies. So those are the three reasons in which we cut almost the data and reorganize some of our concepts here. But there's lots of ways in which you can do this. And I'm curious, Jenny, what you found over at Lazard in looking at some of this research as well.
Yeah, thank you. As an active manager, having a deep understanding of how companies manage human capital, it really is an integral part of the fundamental research and the engagement that we have with companies. And maybe just to kind of take a moment, just to be clear about what we mean when we say human capital, what we're thinking about. So we're thinking about, one, how the company manages employees. Second, you know, how it interacts with its customers. Thirdly, its suppliers. And then lastly, you know, how it interacts with the community to protect its social license to operate. And then we're also really trying to understand, you know, what are the issues that are most material on a sector-specific basis? Because I think it's really important to recognize that the human capital issues that may be most relevant for one company might be quite different to another. So, for example, you know, energy and industrial companies, we know investing in worker and operational safety from a human capital perspective is critical, not only for the protection of employees, but we know also to kind of mitigate production interruptions. And, you know, we've seen some really quite extreme cases of where safety failure has really impacted and had, you know, significant negative impact on shareholder value as well. And human rights is a kind of separate human capital issue, might be much more relevant for us to understand for companies that, you know, have complex supply chains or are sourcing from areas where there's increased geopolitical risk. You know, perhaps, again, industrials is a good example of that. But just going back to maybe the kind of the bigger picture question about why effective human capital is so important, I think that Amantha talked about some of the research and thinking about climate and AI. So I thought I'd touch maybe on a different aspect, and which we're quite focused on, which is diversity and inclusion. And really, as part of our holistic approach to researching companies, we're looking at not only what the company products and services do and whether there are solutions that can help cases of inequality, such as digital and financial inclusion or access to healthcare. And then we're also looking at, you know, what the companies are doing in terms of managing D&I through their policies and their performance, and then also how they can incorporate that through their value chain with suppliers. And then maybe just to kind of say a couple of reasons on why we think that's important from a financial perspective. You know, what's the value of us focusing on human capital when we're investing in companies? You know, so first of all, we know that a company's approach to D&I can have a significant impact on financial performance, and there's significant academic evidence to suggest, you know, more diverse companies can have higher returns on capital, lower risk profiles, and that can improve returns to shareholders. McKinsey put a study out that showed that companies in the top quarter of gender diversity are 25% more likely to have above average product profitability. There's another study from Credit Suisse, which was published, that shows of the 3,000 companies they assessed, on the sector neutral basis, companies with higher female representation in leadership do have higher EBITDA margins and CFROI, perhaps 2% above those companies that are less diverse. So there is a kind of increasing body of academic evidence that shows this is financially material. And then secondly, I'd say from a sustainability perspective, we do find that those companies that have good D&I tend to have better corporate governance overall. They have heightened resilience, lower risk, and we can see that those companies with a more diverse and inclusive approach have higher engagement with employees, increased retention rates, and therefore increased productivity. So really kind of helps with talent development and ultimately better decision making. And then the third thing I just point to, you know, which is obviously very important when we're thinking about sustainable investing, is just what's the real world impact. And there's a huge economic and social benefit to investing in D&I. In 2015, McKinsey estimated that if women were to play an identical role in labour markets to that of men, perhaps as much as $28 trillion of could be added to the global annual GDP. So supporting women can drive economic prosperity for all. And I think this is even more important perhaps in emerging markets where the gender gaps are often wider, and the economic benefits of closing these gaps could really be quite substantial. Unfortunately, you know, we know that the progress is still glacial, and you know, the World Economic Forum has estimated that current rate of progress, it's going to take another 169 years to close the global gender gap in economic participation. Sorry. So we do see this as a, you know, really important part of when we're thinking about human capital, you know, understanding the financial impact from a financial perspective, but also the real world impact. Very important part of our research and companies.
So diving a bit deeper, Amantha, I suppose a few questions. Are there any significant changes that you anticipate in the workplace, whether it be the result of increased labor strikes and shortages, technology's growing influence, or even employee demands for better accommodation and benefits? Also, what are the opportunities and challenges that you anticipate considering this ever-evolving landscape?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. And in some ways, as I kind of think about your question, I'm also thinking back about the answer that you gave, Jenny, which is human capital management, of course, matters, but the what in terms of industry and as well as the where in terms of country or region really matters as well to answer this question about changes that we're anticipating. So I mentioned the impact of climate change and how it will contribute to changes in the workplace. Now, that may be true kind of across all industries and globally at a kind of a shallow level, but it will be most important at a deeper level in certain workplaces that will have to adapt to, let's say, more extreme weather, including more extreme heat, And these workplaces would be those areas like agriculture, mining, construction, even some subparts of energy. Just to give you one statistic there, this is from the U.S., a study from the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, which kind of showed that decreased productivity did lead to slower capital accumulation for a set of companies under their review. We also saw in the U.S. that heat exposure resulted in about 170,000 workplace injuries just here in the U.S. Based on the report from an oversight organization. So this is just one example of kind of really honing into those 2 points I made earlier, but just noting that the workplace will change, but it will not be even across every industry and across every region. I think the other example here is we saw over the last year, again, in the U.S., but in other parts of the world, more worker organization. And some of this is likely to come again and kind of in fuller force as companies are going to have to manage how they introduce AI to boost worker productivity, but while managing kind of frictions, especially in those areas where we'll have to use technology as an aid instead of a replacement. And so all of those are areas of focus. And of course, a change that we already observed as a result of the pandemic that may be resilient in some areas, may be reversing in other regions, is the rise of remote working, which is, if anything, an example of how it's important for companies to stay agile and think about these evolutions, especially with macro trends and tailwinds. It means, you know, agility here cuts both ways, because for companies that are reversing their kind of flexibility of their workforce, that's having implications. And for us as investors, what's the takeaway here? It's really important to kind of lean in on those metrics, which tell us how our companies doing on, number one, who they're hiring, do they have the right person kind of in the job? And secondly, what does their retention look like? Let's say they have the right person in the job, regardless of who they are or because of who they are in terms of diversity. Is the retention there, which is able to kind of enable them to really grow productivity and minimize costs of turnover? And then three, how are companies actually engaging with their workforce as a stakeholder to ensure longer term kind of resilience? And maintain this agility. So those would be your my kind of takeaways. Now, Jenny, you shared a lot of this research, especially around a focus on gender and productivity, which we've paid attention and spoken to as well before. What are you seeing in terms of evolution moving forward, though?
Yeah, really interesting topic that you mentioned, and we're obviously very focused on understanding physical impacts of climate, both on companies' operations, but also, as you say, on kind of worker productivity, and then the impact that might have on cost of insurance. And I think, you know, AI is obviously something we're paying closer attention to, but, you know, particularly actually looking at AI ethics at the moment and what good practice looks like from that perspective. I'll point to a couple of other things I think that help to kind of understand some of the changes that we're expecting to see. And it's more from a kind of investor perspective, where there is perhaps more of a challenge to understand companies' performance on social issues. Often it's easier with the data that's available on environmental issues to really understand their progress. But there's a couple of things coming from a European perspective, where we see the Corporate Social Responsibility Directive that's coming from the EU, which is pushing more standardized reporting of human capital KPIs, including gender and ethnicity pay gaps. We know that the SEC is also introducing new regulations to standardize DE&I KPIs. And currently, we've estimated only 9% of US companies actually report gender pay gap, which is an important part of understanding how companies are implementing their own DE&I policies. So we really think that those regulations, which are pushing for more disclosure, could help us as investors to understand the progress that companies are making. And then in Europe as well, there's another directive, the CSDDD. Lots of acronyms in Europe for the regulations around sustainability and ESG. But again, that's looking at actually making companies liable for human capital mismanagement in their supply chain, which is, I see what's in terms of the trend, really kind of a growing increased focus on the accountability for human capital management within supply chain. that we're seeing for European companies. One other thing I just point to, which is, you know, perhaps a little bit removed from the discussion on corporates, but we are seeing kind of greater focus of asset owners that should, you know, start to kind of understand a bit more of the impact from their portfolios from a social perspective. And actually, the UK government commissioned a social task force a couple of years back to highlight the importance of understanding social factors in investment decisions. It's really targeted at pension fund trustees, but it's emphasising that social factors are inseparable from business and investment. You know, really understanding workforce conditions, remuneration practice, bribery and corruption, etc., modern slavery, and understanding those can really help to understand the resilience and the impact, and how, you know, their investments are creating value. And so I think it's interesting to kind of see that for individual companies, industries, there's an increased focus from the asset owners to understand how that might systematically be relevant to their portfolios and perhaps more broadly to the economy.
Well, Jenny Anderson, Amantia Muhiddini, thank you both again for dropping by the Sustainable Investing Perspectives podcast and for sharing your insights today with our listeners and their clients. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.